Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
This player just turned for Tate. He's got a breakaway. Tate to win the game. Marion Hossa. A singular effort.
Here's Matt Smith. 22
years old.
Did it again.
Crawford. Call the cops.
Welcome into a new episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager for Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DML57. Apologize, we took a little, had some schedule conflicts last week, and there really wasn't much to talk about. So we did not have a recording last week, but we have plenty to talk about this evening because of some news that just dropped, about an hour ago. So I've got all of my usual line mates with me this evening. Up first, you can find on Twitter at Shepherd Price. It is the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, Shepherd Price.
Like my favorite wrestler, rejoin the Dark Order.
Rejoin the Dark Order or you were cursed forever.
Yes. Yes, although he is technically with the best friends, and I don't know if that's a permanent thing, but Danhausen is a best friend.
Danhausen is the best, period. That's what I've decided in my 2 months of getting back into pro wrestling. Danhausen's the best.
Wait until he's in the ring.
I can't. One is a broken whatever heels.
Legs. I think it's leg. Well, I think it's either leg or legs.
Yeah, broken something. He broke something. I know that. And so I'm looking forward to that, but... Let's keep moving along and bring in the next member of our usual crew. You can find on Twitter at Mill182, and he is the Second City Hockey, what unfortunately a somber sky point Mark Lanigan was to the Screaming Trees. It is Mill Savage.
Very nice, very evil.
Very nice, very evil.
Exactly. I believe Danhausen has a inanimate carbon rod placed in his leg. I believe that's the problem. So hopefully he'll be back soon to do the tequila dance and then kick somebody in the chest.
After putting human teeth in their mouth, because it's not a foreign object if it's already in the mouth.
Yep. And I'm pretty sure I think he's considered best friends adjacent.
Okay. Yes. Wheeler until Brian Danielson steals him.
He and Orange Cassidy are boys, right? Like they seem.
Yeah, they both wrestled in Crown Point against each other.
Oh, there you go.
Sure. Before AEW.
Oh, not like 2 weeks ago at the whatever.
No, but I did see Dante Martin, Sky Blue, and Layla Hirsch at that.
Oh, there you go.
Which was cool.
Yeah, sorry, I missed out. I was watching other wrestling.
That's all right. They'll be back in March. Warhorse is there. Warhorse rules ass.
All right. We'll keep that on the calendar. But without any further ado, let's bring in the other member of our usual crew who will surely steer us away from the pro wrestling conversation. And she is Second City Hockey's Bull and Wall of Text. You can't find her on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. It's Betsy.
I used to watch wrestling a lot when I was younger. I just kind of grew out of it. I didn't have cable and
see, I did the same thing as you are, but then I got I think it's a combination of a lot of things of the Blackhawks not being good, maybe just like pandemic boredom and everything else. And just, I saw like a bunch of people talk about wrestling and I started glancing at it. So maybe when you get, up into your 30s where I'm at, maybe you can dive into pro wrestling again in a few years.
I'll say
just AEW, not WWE, because yes, WWE absolutely has become garbage.
Exactly.
I'll tell you that most of like the I've been in like a fandom group for like years on Twitter, and we kind of cycle through the same type. Like you can always see whenever like all of a sudden everybody's into K-pop, or all of a sudden everybody's into hockey, because there was a time in like 2013, literally my entire feed that had never watched hockey before, all of a sudden, and I was like, this is new. I'm glad I have something I can contribute to what is essentially American Idol people at the time. There's like a good swath of them into women's hockey women's wrestling right now. So I have been kind of vicariously watching like clips through that, but not enough to immerse myself yet. But it's predominantly women's wrestling.
For what it's worth, WWE has a lot of the best women's wrestlers.
Yes.
Like WWE has an amazing amount of talent. They're just booked like shit.
Yes. And I'm just waiting for New Day to become AEW wrestlers.
They're just, they have some talent, but they're not properly utilizing it, correct? Is that what you're saying? Because that's a perfect segue to the 2021-2022 Chicago Blackhawks.
There it is, folks.
There it is. Stuck the landing and everything.
Dave just chipped one out of the sand and just went right in the hole.
Exactly.
In which case, the New Day are Alex DeBrincat.
Yes. Yeah, we can get on board with that. Absolutely. So yeah, that does bring us to the Blackhawks. And the reason we've gathered, well, we gathered because it's been a week, but we also, the timing of this happened to be quite fortuitous, because just about an hour ago, the Daily Faceoff's Frank Saravelli reported that Kyle Davidson is going to become the Chicago Blackhawks' 10th general manager in team history. That announcement is expected on Tuesday or today, when you're listening to this, I assume. So after a lengthy search, they had a whole bunch of candidates, a bunch of I think it was down to three finalists of Greenberg, and I wanted to say John Greenberg, but that's not the name. John Greenberg worked for The Athletic. Is it Josh Greenberg? The guy from the Cubs. I can't remember his first name now.
I thought it was Jeff.
Jeff Greenberg?
It's Jeff.
Jeff Greenberg. That's the one who's worked from the Cubs front office. And they had Matthew Darche, I think. I'm not exactly sure how to say it. It seems very French-Canadian. I feel like
Kirby Darche.
Yeah, exactly. He was also a finalist, but it looks like they're ultimately settling on Kyle Davidson, and the internet is ablaze with discussion about whether or not that's a good idea. My main reaction, or my primary reaction, is just one of shock and horror, because the Blackhawks general manager is now younger than me, and that is not a sentence I am comfortable saying, but I'm just going to have to get used to it, I guess. So we're just going to swing it around the panel and get the usual, just get some thoughts and see where it goes, because I think we've had plenty of thoughts in our pre-show Slack discussion for the last half hour or so. And the news is all fresh, so the thoughts are still fresh. So we'll see where it goes. And I usually swing it around to Shay first. So let's do that here. Shay, what are your thoughts?
You said the phrase settling on. I like the first part of that, because that's exactly what the Blackhawks are doing. Although, if anybody expected the Blackhawks to actually make the right hire after the last year, they went with a young guy.
Certainly warranted with the team lately.
They went with a young guy who was groomed by arguably one of the worst GMs over the past decade.
Hang on, Stan Bowman was real bad. Look at the back on it. All right, let's. I'll give it the obvious preface that everything that happened in 2010, why he got fired, was horrendous. From a purely on ice perspective, though, like I know it gets into
okay. They couldn't draft. They didn't really do well in free agency. They couldn't get Kane a center for forever. Like what did he do well?
But they did win two Stanley Cups.
Okay, but not because of Stan Bowman. I would argue that the three Cups were not because of Stan Bowman. They were because of the two prior GMs.
I mean,
Dale Talon and the guy who drafted Brent Seabrook and Corey Crawford. I forget his name. I wasn't a fan then.
Mike Smith.
But that guy did more for the team than Stan Bowman.
You can make the argument that Dale Talon and Mike Smith contributed more, but I don't know if I would buy that Stan Bowman did nothing. Because the team was left.
I'm not saying he did nothing. I'm saying he did negatively.
No, but he contributed at least to some level of success for a while. See, I don't want to rehash the whole Stan Bowman era, but I guess that my argument is that, like, what if Kyle Davidson learned all the things to not do? That's my devil's advocate.
That is optimistic as opposed to a guy from Tampa Bay who would have been the correct choice, who like was like widely apparently according to reporting from Elliot Friedman, widely praised, like he was getting interviews everywhere, and who would have had Iserman, who's arguably the best GM in hockey, and Brisebois, who's
okay,
not bad,
okay,
as but then, his mentors instead.
Then you get into what I like to think of as, and this comes up in the NFL all the time, it comes as Bill Belichick syndrome, and that all of his assistant coaches go somewhere else.
Or like, yes, but okay. But again,
and they don't win anything because Bill Belichick does so much of it. So how do you know that Darsh in Tampa or anybody else that they interviewed wasn't just a byproduct of a really good front office person over them?
Because we look at the fact that Tampa Bay has won two cups since Iserman left, and that the Barclay Goudreau and Blake Coleman moves were done by Brisebois, which means that one of at least the first assistant of Iserman's to get a job in the NHL is doing a really good job and has won two cups.
That's
so
fair.
This is not the Belichick.
Oh, so wait. So Brisebois won two cups with the team that Iserman assembled. And he gets credit for those, but Stan Bowman doesn't get credit?
Yes, because Barclay Goudreau and Blake Coleman, which, again, were moves he made.
Oduya or Letty or drafting Saad or drafting Shaw or
drafting Alex DeBrinket?
Or again,
the past decade.
I'm sorry.
Over the past 12 years.
Sorry, I know it's not my term, but I can totally understand not being like – hating Bowman from 2016 on, because he made mistake after mistake and they got bigger here as he went. But
he has done objectively nothing good since the drafting of Alex Brinkett. That's fine.
I agree with that statement. But to say that he didn't do anything for the Blackhawks, because after 2010,
I'm not saying he didn't do anything. I'm saying he did overall his tenure here was negative.
And I'm saying that if you look at it like that, as if the cups didn't happen, and they would not have happened, 2013 does not happen if Bowman doesn't rebuild the team, essentially. The core is still here, so he's got like a really good basis. But how many teams have really good cores that never win a cup?
Yeah, that core got shit on in 11 and 12.
Colorado ain't won anything with a pretty good core.
Guess who Oduya replaced? Chris fucking Campoli.
I know. Yeah, exactly. And Oduya is the exact same type of grab that a Blake Coleman or he's the exact same, an underrated player playing well on a bad team, bought low. And they looked at his analytics and they went, but he could be better. And sure enough, he comes to here and he is. They slotted Letty exactly where they needed to. And then they did have decent draft picks. They just didn't do well with second contracts on any of them for a long time. Because
they didn't draft anybody
underneath Bowman, the only first round pick that did not become a NHL player was McNeil.
Mark McNeil? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's define
NHL player for a second, though, because none of them became impact, really. Like look at his drafting history and tell me that that's a good drafting history.
I mean,
Stan Bowman's drafting history is good.
Teravainen,
Hartman. Became better players elsewhere because of bad trades that Stan Bowman made.
Okay,
you cannot tell me that the Phil Deneau trade, that the Perry Teravainen trade were good trades. I'm not saying they are.
I'm saying you said that he'd never drafted well, and he did occasionally draft well.
Okay, but again,
now, granted, they became better players elsewhere. Kelly, but still.
It's better to draft. I think what the point Betts is trying to make is it's better. At least it's an indication that they knew how to spot talent and draft it. Obviously, they completely mismanaged the handling of those players once they had them on the team. Nobody here is going to defend the Deneau.
I mean, I have the biggest pet peeve with the way he handled second. Anybody who is in the comments with me, I bring it up whenever anybody says something.
That's,
I'm like,
I think that's where the Bill and Wolf second nickname came from, actually.
Yes, exactly. That was one of my biggest, like, I did this like huge breakdown of it. I swear, I think I hit like the word cap limit on a comment and had to like go back and like,
I didn't
edit
even know
it
those
down.
Exist. All right, let's.
They did.
But again. You say he can spot talent. Over the last two drafts of his, he did nothing but draft size. He was just, what was Minnesota's really bad GM's name? Paul something. He was just that guy. The last two drafts, he was just
Fenton.
That guy.
Paul Fenton.
Fenton. He was just Fenton. Yeah.
Okay. Last two drafts. All right. Let's swing this around to Betsy and let's bring this up to 2020 or 2022, whatever year it is. I forget. We understand the Stan Bowman's legacy in Chicago is complicated at best from an on ice perspective. Off ice is a whole other can of worms that we're not going to get into today because we've already done that show. So Betsy, your Kyle Davidson thoughts. I know Stan Bowman's in there, but let's try and at least focus on Davidson.
My Kyle Davidson thoughts are that it's crazy that Shay and I were disagreeing so much there because I agree with them about the grooming part. That's the only thing we actually know about Davidson because he hasn't really done any trades yet except
the
for
the Curtis Gabriel move.
Yes, which he's a bad player, but it was a wash anyway. And
Curtis Gabriel has played more NHL games than Chad Chris has. So,
and
Chad Chris.
Who was drafted just before Sam Girard. Which
all right.
Again,
all right. I'll just say that,
you know, like that ended up being a wash. It wasn't a big deal. I would have preferred him not bend over for an interim coach. I think that's weird too. Mm-hmm. But the only thing we actually know is he's groomed by Bowman. And there is a chance, like so far, like Ben Pope and Laz, like a bunch of the regular beats have come out and said, well, from what I know, he does have a fresh perspective and, you know, he wants to change the organization. He doesn't think like Bowman. And I'm like, okay, they would know better than me, but they're also possibly mouthpieces for the organization a little bit. They're there to be positive sometimes. But my whole thing is if they were looking for a fresh perspective, they could have gone outside. That would be a definitive mm-hmm. fresh perspective. Yeah. They can sit there and sell Davidson as something new and shiny. But if you really wanted it to be like a clear, this is going to be something new, you just had to go outside. And also, I think they walked through the motions. I think Davidson was the pick from the beginning, and they did this whole almost circus show around it to be like, we're not just picking internal who we like. So that's the way it comes off to me.
It is very, I got to say, like, it's not my money, so I don't care, but that is an elaborate amount of time and money and effort spent on a dog and pony show of just giving Kyle Davidson the job. Like I think
the last month they would have announced him probably a month ago if Rocky Works had not opened his mouth.
That's fair. Elliot Friedman said like that Kyle Davidson was viewed as the favorite from the get-go, so I don't know. I think Betsy, you've been saying like for the last 2 months, I think you've been saying it's going to be Davidson. It's been in our Slack chat. I don't know if it's emerged anywhere else, but I will confirm for everyone listening. Betsy's been saying it's going to be Davidson. And I kept telling myself, I kept trying to not fall to that conclusion. I felt like it was always in the back of my mind and I wanted to talk myself out of it. But here we are anyway. Sorry, Betsy, I'll let you finish your point.
Well, I was just going to say that it's done. And at this point, I'm not gonna hold Bowman against him going forward.
Yeah,
that's the only thing you can do at this point.
Yeah, everything else. I mean, like the best, the most positive, or I guess the biggest feather that you could put in a Kyle Davidson cap right now is within 2 weeks of him being named the interim general manager, he was able to convince the front office to fire the head coach because it was so obvious that things were not working. I feel like for an interim general manager to fire a non-interim coach, like I don't know if that's – I would have to look it up to see if that's ever happened before. It doesn't come to mind. But usually interim general managers don't get to fire head coaches, which tells you how bad the situation was. But also I feel like, you know, some points are awarded to Davidson for at least making that observation.
If he had anything to do with the hiring of Derek King as the interim coach, then that tars the feather a little bit.
I know if they were gonna hire an interim head coach, you're not gonna get Bruce Boudreau to show
Crawford.
Up on an interim basis.
Mark Crawford
might be the head coach anyway. He's just not the titled head coach. Like there's been plenty of discussion around that from several places that Mark Crawford is heavily involved with a lot of things. So they needed someone to pull the Titanic up from the bottom of the ocean as it was heading at the moment. And I mean, Derek King righted the ship a little bit. I guess that'll be one thing, is if they name Derek King the full-time head coach, well, then we'll let everybody throw themselves off of building somewhere. But let's get Mill in for his thoughts before I forget. Mill, go ahead.
Okay, well, I just have two quick points about this Davidson thing, because I don't think I'm as like riled up as everybody else about it. First off, getting a young guy or girl into the door of the NHL, or person, I should say, getting anybody young into a job there is very difficult. So I'm not going to hang my hat on like grooming. Like, this fucking guy wanted a job and he got in the door any way he could, I'm assuming. And we could have guessed the same shit about like a guy like Sullivan, like, oh, he came from this Hawks organization. Well, look what he ended up being, right? After the Boston catastrophe that nobody remembers. So I really think we have to give it time and just see, like,
right,
this guy might not be anything like Bowman. We don't know. Just because he worked under him. I mean, I worked under people and then eventually, you know, climbed up ladders where I was nothing like the people who hired me. You know what I mean? Or taught me.
Yes. Yeah, that's entirely, it's absolutely possible.
So that's just my first point. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying I can't get all like excited or disappointed yet. It's just too early. But I really think they have to establish an on-ice culture of like, okay, like, this is the GM, this is the coach, this is the relationship, we're going into training camp, what kind of team are we, what kind of style do we play, what kind of guys do we need to require to play that style, and then you can kind of build a team and get some kind of skeleton. You know, they have to decide what they're going to do with Taves and Kane. I mean, like, there's a lot of decisions to make. This isn't going to be a quick turnaround.
Yeah, I'm trying to say five things at once and just stuttering came out. The job that Kyle Davidson is walking into is not an easy one. It's a very difficult task. And I think that's why the idea of hiring somebody so young and new to this job, even if he's been the interim guy for 2 months, hiring somebody new and young to that, you know, they're immediately going 0 to 90. Like, there will be, there's no easing into this role. Like, you are handed an absolute mess of a situation and you've got to make the best of it for your first ever time as a general manager. That's not encouraging. But as you said, Mill, like, the fact that he is a young guy lends itself to the idea that maybe it's a different perspective, that maybe he has a different way of thinking and doing things, but we're not going to know that until moves are made. The good news I have in that regard is, the trade deadline's in what, 3 weeks? So I think we're going to learn pretty quickly about, we're going to learn a decent amount about him.
I just want to say,
go ahead, Jay.
I will also say that there's a good track. There is a decent person out there who is a young GM named Kyle Dubas, who is proving that young GMs can work. However, big asterisk, Kyle Dubas had managed both the Toronto Marlies and the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds before he became the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And Davidson doesn't have that history.
All right, but so, hey, just remind me, how many Stanley Cups has Kyle Dubas won real quick? I know everyone's calling him the boy wonder, but...
Well, he's into analytics.
I would much rather have him than Kyle Dubas.
I just want to put an end cap on my thoughts, is Davidson could end up sucking out loud. Like, I'm not denying that.
Yeah,
but I just think that whoever was going to come in to clean up the mess of like, okay, we still have Q, but there's cap space hell, so the defense sucks. We fire the coach. Now the cap space is better. We still have these old guys. Now we're trading guys. Now the coach is bad. It's like they just are basically handing somebody a shovel, and it's like Jurassic Park when they see the huge pile of shit, and it's just like, clean this up. So it's going to take
very some good time. Reference. Very good. Yeah.
So basically, he's David Kylson is Jeff Goldblum.
David Kylson.
That's my new name for him.
Okay. Because of Brian Danielson.
Yeah, the American Dragon, David Kylson.
Oh God, I guess the word that I've come to for this move is just uninspiring. I think what Betsy said about having Betsy or Shea, one of you two said it, having an outside perspective come into the organization would have been like a breath of fresh air and given you more reason for optimism. The fact that they just took the interim tag off the guy who's been in the organization for the last 10 to 12 years doesn't do much to inspire confidence that everything's going to be better under Davidson's tenure. But I similar to what Mill said, like, I don't really, it's so much of an unknown. And I think this is true with any organizational hire. I think the same thing will be true whenever he settles on the head coach. Like, I don't have – sports is such a weird calculus sometimes. The chemistry just – sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't for reasons known and not known. So just – I don't know what to say about him other than, yeah, it's uninspiring, but I have no reason to think that he's going to be the next Peter Chiarelli. I also have no reason to think he's going to be the next Steve Yzerman.
Or Benning.
He's going to be somewhere, I assume somewhere in the middle, and that's a very wide range to be in, and we'll see where he ends up. Like, it's not Peter Chiarelli. Like, I would like to get that on the board. I'm very happy they didn't.
Hard agree.
Oh, my God. Sure. That would have been.
He wasn't on the short list, guys. Come on.
I don't care. The fact that he was even considered scared the shit out of me.
I'm not going to lie. That's part of the reason I thought it was such like a fake thing. Because they were like, now we're going to throw in at least a name that somebody knows.
Okay. We're going to throw in some bad veterans.
They're like, we're going to make everybody hit the goddamn panic switch. Like, yeah, now we're going to have some fucking shit to write about at secondcityhockey.com.
Was that the whole reason was why they did that? It's like, well, we're going to get people to say at least we didn't hire Peter Chiarelli.
Yes. Yes.
You know what? That's a good fucking PR
move. But also, I also think the worst is we're listening to the NHL a little bit, and apparently the NHL loves Peter Chiarelli. So.
Well, somebody has to, because there's no reason that guy should continue to get jobs.
Can I... I have one point that I will be in Davidson's favor, because apparently Brian Campbell is going to be a part of his inner circle.
Yeah, which that's I'm very happy about that. Just
the inner circle.
Yes.
The inner circle.
I'm a huge Brian Campbell fan. So thrilled that he's back.
Yeah. And I've heard nothing when he was playing this last little stint and doing all that kind of stuff. There was all this stuff about how he was such a mentor to the young players and how he thought about the game in a way, you know, like he just evaluated them in a really good way, and, you know, doing coaching stuff and Rockford, you know, so I'm very excited about that. But I also think it might suggest that they're willing to listen to the players that are still on the team. Cause that was something that Kane was very, you know, like vocal about, you know. Kane is not really a player that speaks to like the NHL as a whole or his organization as a whole.
He's usually a lot of cliches and
exactly. And he comes out and very specifically on Strome, of course. And then he's like, I hope they listen to us. And then you've got DeBrincat talking about Hagel being the identity of the team almost, you know, like those are heavy words from two of the biggest stars and two of the only players like legitimately carrying the load currently. So I'm hopeful. I don't want the front office to like just listen to them, but I would love for them to get the insight and for those players to feel like they're being listened to at least a little bit. And I feel like Brian Campbell being included means that that's a possibility.
Well Betsy, to your point, do you remember when they traded or they didn't re-sign Corey Crawford and they were trading guys and Jonathan Toews came out and ripped them a new one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like that's exactly what we don't need.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't expect them to follow. Like if Kane says, hey, if you trade Strome, I'm going to leave. Like, I don't want any of that kind of stuff. But as long as the players feel like they're being listened to and that their input is being taken into, even if it's ultimately not the direction they go in, I think that's a good relationship to have with your core players. Especially ones that think the game, like there's a lot of people who think Kane's probably going to be a GM one day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kane thinks about this game in ways I think Joe Sakic and Steve Yzerman thought about this game.
Except for those guys both played two ways. This is a lot different.
Yeah, that's why I think, man. That's why I think the ultimate choice still should have been Marian Hossa.
If you've ever seen any of the stuff that comes out of the Daryl, what is his last name?
Daryl Belfry?
Yes. The way that Kane talks about players in there and how they play two-way makes me think that it's not that Kane doesn't understand how to do that. It's just, he doesn't do it. He can't do it himself. Maybe even, it's not in him to do that kind of stuff, but he understands how it is. It's kind of like how players that are like mediocre NHL players end up being great coaches. Like that's what happens regularly.
Isn't Kane also quietly like undersized too?
Yeah, I mean, he's only like 5'10", like 180, I think. Like, that's not, it's not that big. So
I don't think he could play two ways that well.
But the thing about Kane is there'll be somebody right in front of him and he could easily pick their pocket because his hands are that good. It'll be some nobody and he just watches them and holds his junk. Like he's just he hangs the uninterested sign too often for my liking defensively for how talented his hands are.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think he could lead the league.
And that's totally a thing he does regularly in the regular season. In the playoffs, it's like that's the whole playoffs Kane thing that happens. He can turn that type of thing off because the amount of times that he would go into a corner, he didn't even touch anybody, but he would be the one that came out with a puck because his hands are that good, was always so fascinating to me. I can't remember, in 2013 he had like the most takeaways, not based on the NHL stats but by regular trackers, people that were manually tracking outside of it. But anyway, that's a whole different discussion. I was just saying that I am excited about player input, including former player input, and that a player that they selected was Brian Campbell. I would love Marian Hossa in there too, but I actually want him more coaching staff related. But that's just, I want
to. I would have loved it if they listened to Brian Campbell a little bit more before the season.
Like, maybe then they wouldn't have traded. Because he mentioned Adam Boqvist. Yeah.
Yes.
I was waiting. Then they would have traded Boqvist. Well, I think, but the overall point about, like, and I hope this is like something that Kyle Davidson does, like, it's you have to have, you know, have the ability to take input and suggestions from players like Kane, probably like Taves too, the other veterans on your team, but also, like, to an extent, you have to have the confidence and you have to have the confidence in your own ability as a general manager to tell them, no, this is not for the best. Because I was just listening to somebody else talking about LeBron James in the NBA and how every time they let him be the pseudo GM, you end up like his team in LA, where he wanted to get all his buddies together and they suck. So the idea of, like, you want to have players input, yes, but you are also the general manager and it is your decision. So there's nothing wrong with taking input, and you absolutely should, from players like Taze and Kane and others who've been around and who have been so good for so long. But you also have to have the ability to, you know, have the spine to stand up for yourself and say, no, I'm going to do this instead because I think it's better.
That's very true.
So,
in Kane's defense, the only players that he likes are good ones, because favorite players are like Panarin.
I mean,
stuff like that. You
know, he didn't stump for he didn't stump for Brandon Bolig to be a second line or David Kampf. That's a more recent example.
The only thing about Kane is, like, when he's done playing hockey, I don't, you know, never know how somebody's going to feel. Like, some people can't leave, and some people want to be like kind of off on the beach. So we're going to see. He's either going to be like an addict and be like, I have to do something in hockey, or he's going to be like, yeah, I'm going to the Jimmy Buffett show later.
No, he does. I agree with, I think Shay said, like, he seems like the, once he's done playing, maybe it takes a year or two to be away from the game and, you know, have a winter without any work, but he does seem like the future GM type. But
Davidson's replacement. Yeah.
Butts and seats.
Yeah. After they fire him in 3 years because he doesn't work well, Shay, is that what you're suggesting?
What's wild is that isn't Kane technically older than Davidson?
Yes. Well, I think they're roughly the same age. I had to look this up today. I think Davidson was born in July of 88. He's 30. He'll be 34 this year. Kane and Taze are both born in 88. I just know that because that's a year. I don't know what their birthdays are.
Kane's November and Taves is April, I believe.
Okay. So, yeah, they're all about the same
age. So the captain is older than the GM. Got it.
Well, he was older than the coach, too. So, right? No, that was Keith.
Fuck, who wasn't older than the coach?
Yeah, Seabrook was the same age because
they were on the same World Juniors team. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're going to take a quick break here after all the general manager discussion. Maybe we'll do more of that. We did have like a week and a half to 2 weeks of games to talk about. I don't know how much interesting stuff happened during that we can discuss, but we're going to try and do that on the other side of this timeout. So come on back for more of the show.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title. And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4-3-2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison. As promised before the break, I want to do a quick recap of the games we've missed. It's been a little bit since we've talked, of course, so we've missed five games. The Blackhawks lost four of them. Shut out twice. All at home. So really been a banner five-game stretch. Now you know why we didn't record last week. But anyway, so they lost to the Blue Jackets 7-4. They lost to the Stars 1-0 in the shootout. That was the game where nobody scored a goal, and Dallas got a point because they won the shootout, so that must have been riveting action. The Panthers beat them 5-2, which, you know, it's gonna happen, they're the Panthers. They beat the Devils 8-5 Friday night in an absolute dong show of a hockey game that was wildly entertaining compared to everything else they've done this year. And then they made up for that by playing a pretty abysmal 4-0 defeat to the St. Louis Blues on Sunday. I don't know if there's anything that stands out in any of your memories from the last 4-5 games that we haven't missed, but Shay, we'll throw it to you first. Anything that stands out in your memory from the last week and a half?
It was special.
Feel free to answer no, and we'll move along.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I will say that, like, the Jake Oettinger, Marc-Andre Fleury shootout game was incredible because Oettinger grew up apparently loving Fleury, and also very well could have been a Blackhawk because he was taken with the Blackhawks' original first-round pick that year. So that's fun. It's fun to know.
Yay. moving along, Betsy, any thoughts from you from the last five games?
The Blackhawks regressed in terms of their puck handling. The amount of turnovers.
Yeah.
So I know that they asked to play a little bit looser because they apparently were getting tired of not scoring at all, you know? We're all very excited about, like, the defensive steps that they took because they did get better at protecting, you know, high danger against high danger chances. But we also were like, there's nothing happening offensively. It's like dead. They went from one extreme to the other to me. Because it's just like completely open now, so it's like I don't know if this coaching staff can. And then the only other point was that I like King fine as like a person, and he seems like an honest, direct guy. But also, when you sit there and say Reese Johnson and Entwistle both are like Brandon Hagel, and you just are like, where are you seeing that other than the fact that they all are high energy guys, but like, stop with that. And then he followed up with Caleb Jones. He was like, Caleb Jones and Connor Murphy have been a good pair. And it's like, objectively, they have not. I'm not even talking about that last game. I'm talking about, like, in general, anytime they're paired, they've been crap. And Caleb Jones has been not good most of the season, which was disappointing because I thought he had a great, training camp and everything. And I was actually really excited. And then he got injured. And when he came on, he just hasn't done anything, really. He's had one or two games, like three or four at most, where you're like, I actually really like him. And if you look at any of those games, it's when his minutes are very sheltered and are low. Yeah. And they could be putting their efforts into other young defensemen, in my opinion. But my point is, every time King says that, I'm like, well, I'm glad he's the interim.
Yeah. I think I appreciated that when Derek King took over, it looked like, you know, they kind of decided, like, this team is just getting, you know,
They're getting picked apart defensively. They're leaving guys wide open in the slot. So we're just going to focus on defense. We're going to play low event hockey. We're going to rely on our really, really good goalie to try to win some games, and we're going to see what happens. And it worked for a while, but that's not really a recipe for long-term success in the NHL. And you're seeing that happen. And now, like, the Blackhawks really can't win any other way. So it's either, you know, you play, like, maybe they'll win a couple of games here and there with the low event style hockey. And then anytime, you know, and eventually they'll run to a low event game where they lose, or they'll run into a game that opens up more and they can't keep up. So it's just, it's an overall, like, anything that leads to a win is a temporary measure that will not work in the long run, which has kind of been the story of the last five seasons of this team. But I think you're seeing it play out with a different guy. At least King had an idea to start, but I think you're seeing why he so far probably is not the guy you want in a long-term full NHL coaching position with your team. Although I'd be interested to see what happens if they bring in somebody else. Like, do they send King back to the AHL? Can he do that? Like,
yeah, they said something about, they're like, well, he's earned a spot to stay with the organization. And I'm like, okay. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like Rockford's doing better. I know he's not there, but, you know, maybe his, I don't know if Anders Sorensen learned under King well to be an AHL coach. I don't know.
Or Söderblom is just playing really well down there.
Or Söderblom's just playing really well down there. Or
Söderblom sees more shots than any other goalie in the AHL.
So, all right. So maybe it's an organizational thing. So maybe that's the number one thing for Kyle Davidson is to get your teams on all levels to stop giving up so many goddamn shots on goal. Somebody look into the Indy Fuel, see how they're doing with shots against. Maybe they're doing it there too. I don't know.
Also, I like how you said other young defenseman for Caleb Jones as if he's young.
I mean, he's 24. I mean, he'll be 25 soon, so I'm okay. Like Ian Mitchell is not that much. I mean, he's a year younger than him, but because he'll be 20. Oh, no, he's like a year and a half, maybe a little bit more than that. I was wrong. But I'm fine with that age group. I'm shocked that they have kept him consistently playing games so much, because other defensemen have been sat for the same mistakes he makes game after game after game.
Yes, and objectively, there's at least three defensive prospects in Rockford who are more talented than him.
I'm just going to assume they believe that Rockford is a better place for them, and that is they are shielding them from the NHL and whatever mess is happening with the Blackhawks, and that's fine.
Like, that's the argument of 20 minutes in the AHL is better than 8 minutes in the NHL.
I guess. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, because Derek King's only going to play them 8 minutes.
Yeah, he played Lucas Reichel 8 minutes in the last game, and I thought that was really weird. Like,
and then Lucas Reichel immediately went back to Rockford and was like smoke showing it again. So,
well, welcome to another Shea drops a bomb and walks away. Derek King hates the kids. He does not like young players.
Okay. Well, but he's the coach of the AHL. That's all half the guys are. You either have like guys under 22 or like Cody Franzen at 35. Like,
yeah, and he played Cody Franzen too much.
Well, but Cody Franzen was actually pretty good for AHL.
I think it's
let's bring him in, and we have been quiet for far too long.
I think it's important to consider like a guy who is a legitimate older guy who's like a Rockford coach. Like, a lot of times they're going to say, this guy still has bad habits. I don't want him out there for 20 minutes, even if he's talented. Even though I don't like when they don't play guys a lot, I'm like that too. Sometimes they just the game speed and some of the habits they have, they're not ready. But
anything from the last five games you want to throw out?
They're mostly boring. Marc-Andre Fleury is incredible. Fuck, yep. The one I covered, like, they had two guys have hat tricks and like still gave up five goals. And also, Söderblom also sees the most shots in the NHL, apparently. But yeah, I just
shots. Fuck them. Like, come on, protect your baby.
You know what the thing is, though? Seriously, something that I noticed in the Blues game, and it goes back to Dallas. Fleury can only carry the team so much. Like, you get him a goal in that game, and he made so many highlight reel saves in the Dallas game, and incredible. But the Blues game, it's like, he still, albeit by one, he still had one more save than Binnington. Like, it's not like, oh, like Fleury laid an egg. It's like the team stinks in front of him. I think that there are guys on the team who, like, Jake McCabe might not suck, but he's playing like he sucks. And like Caleb Jones.
I enjoy that set. The way you phrase that, that's very good.
But the only thing that I do like, and I'm assuming King, being an older guy who was an AHL coach, I'm assuming this is part of him or Mark Crawford or whoever. They are playing a little bit more disciplined than they did under Jeremy Colleton.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, like you remember Zadorov, like, leaving to go nail somebody, and then he goes in the box and then he plays the next shift. Like, yeah. a real coach, even if you're in peewees, is going to sit your ass down for that. So, like, I think King might have, I hate to say have the room, but, like, I think some of those young guys know, like, all right, like, stay in position. Don't be an idiot. When they take a penalty, it's because they can't hit the game speed. Like, they just can't keep up.
Yeah, it's like a lack of execution, not a lack of, like, brains, I guess. They're not doing.
Yeah,
yeah, it's just I think your point about, like, King still having the room, like, it seems like there's plenty of games where, you know, if they give up an early goal or what have you, like, they're not, like, in a lot of the games in the Colleton era, especially the first month of this season, you know, the Hawks gave up one or two goals. And you could just see everybody pack it in. Like, I feel like that's not happening this season as much, which is, it ain't much, but it's all we got, so we're gonna take it.
Like, so, it's like right after the Blues game when that's exactly what happened.
Well, yeah.
The Devils game, I had to make sure I wasn't holding a PlayStation controller in my hands.
The Devils game and the Blues game on Sunday. I remember Betsy was on the rehab. I messaged her in the second intermission. I'm going to go for a bike ride before the sun sets. This game sucks. maybe I'm giving up on the team, which
that game sucked.
It wasn't even, there was nothing redeeming about it. Like, they got shut out, which is obviously a big part of that, but I feel like I don't remember the Hawks having a scoring chance in that game. Like,
they did in the first. So they had a couple of good shots.
Okay.
Growing up before the NBC era, and early on in that, I used to really love those 2 o'clock matinee Sunday games. But then the Hawks got so good, they would always be on at like 11:30. Mm-hmm. But I used to love going to the 2 o'clock game, and that's like what that Blues one was. And I was just thinking, I'm like, man, like, imagine going to that game.
Yeah, imagine you build your Sunday on going to see the Hawks and they just get their asses handed.
And there's nothing to cheer about. There's
and
no
it was goal. Kids' Day. That's right.
And it was against the Blues.
And they said, fuck them kids.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of, that Michael Jordan meme of fuck them kids. That's all. Yeah, somebody posted that. It's all I could think about. The main thing I enjoyed about the Devils, the game against the Devils, was the double hat trick, because that brought me back to the 2003 Dazé Sullivan double hat trick game where they each got a hat trick. It was green hat day, so they kept their green hats on the ice. And me being who I was like 15 when that game happened, recorded it on VHS and rewatched it 86,000 times because that was the only game worth watching, I think, that entire season.
So, Steve Sullivan was a tough little son of a bitch. Steve
Sullivan was my guy, man. He was not the same type of player as Alex DeBrincat, but just a short, undersized guy that gave hope to short people everywhere.
Like Dazé, we all knew he was wasting his best years here. Like you still see Dazé jerseys at the UC, but like Steve Sullivan's underrated as hell.
Yeah. So it was fun to be able to walk down memory lane through that game. The Columbus game was a similarly gong show as the New Jersey one. The Hawks just didn't win that, but I don't know. I mean, I'm glad that something happened with the general manager position. So now we can focus on some of the things that need to happen with the organization in terms of trading away veteran players at the deadline and all the stuff, because the all-in-all stuff, is it really going to change? Like, this team's not good. They got 25, 30 some games left, 28 exactly after the St. Louis game on Sunday. So it's very much playing out the stretch. I would like to see them start, you know, the guys who are not going to be around, like the Calvin DeHaan's and maybe Marc-Andre Fleury. If they're not going to be here, Ryan Carpenter's another one. Like, start sending some of these guys out so we can start getting some of the young players in, so we have something to watch over the last couple of months of the season.
I think the Hawks need to take a page out of the Bulls book. 13 new players next year.
I don't think they could do that with the salary cap situation. But yeah. And that's really all the hockey thoughts I have. Like, and anything else from the panel hockey wise?
I'm glad that I got to use the Youth Gone Wild title against New Jersey since that's a New Jersey band.
There you go.
Like, I got lucky that night that it was a fucking gong show.
Well, Mill, the hope is that we get lucky every night, but sometimes it just doesn't work out that way.
You're telling me.
Well, on that note, I guess let's do a quick food take before we get out of here. I mentioned I had something. I feel like the stereotype for my generation is I'm firmly in the millennial group. I imagine you guys are all in that same age range as well, right? Or some of you too young? Yeah, I know, Shay, you're the young. Shay, you're the youngest, so you might be on the
board. I consider myself as a millennial.
All right. Everybody makes all this talk about avocado being like the best and all these avocado toast jokes. Avocado sucks. I'm sorry. It's not good. What is so good?
Avocado guacamole. Guacamole is very good.
I'll take salsa over guacamole every day of the week and three times on take. Sunday. I don't understand what this rage is about. Why did avocado become the thing assigned to our generation? I don't understand.
Because it's not that good. It tastes good and it's good for you.
Eat some fruit. There's plenty of good fruits out there that are also good.
Avocados are better for you than fruit because vegetables are better for you.
I'm sorry. This avocado shit, you gotta stop. That's my take. Avocado's overrated. It sucks. Get it off my plate. Maybe if I ate more avocado, I'd be healthier, but oh well.
I think like they're good like in like with other stuff. Like I'll eat it in a salad or on a sandwich, and I like guac like in my But
so
like I don't.
So it's a condiment, is what you're talking
about.
But
well, no, that's not what I'm saying. It has to be in there with a bunch of other stuff. Like I don't want to spread it on toast.
Yeah, I don't even know where the hell that came from.
You guys have not had good avocado toast, then, man.
No.
Like,
oh. No, so but like,
is this a regional thing again? Is that what you're going to tell me?
No,
about?
No, it's not. In fact, I don't think it's a New very York popular. Canada. Yeah, I was about to say. So, I've had really, really good avocado toast, and it's a better spread than some other things that you could just have. Like, and it's not hard to do. And I don't know. I love avocado. I'm weird and like to cut it up and just have it with like little chips everywhere. Once in a while as a snack, so well,
that's not weird. That's
normal for that's us. Basically normal. yeah, and then guac is. I'm always that weirdo that's like, I'm gonna need you to bring me like an extra large guac to this table because I need to not only dip my chips in it, I need to like put it into whatever I'm eating, even though I already asked for it to be put into it too.
Well, guac is one of those things too where like. It can be awesome, and like, or it could just be like, like whatever. Like you know, Chipotle guac is fine, but like if we go to like a Mexican market and buy real guac and like liquid fire hot sauce, like load my shit up with that.
I don't think I've ever had a bad guac.
That's what I'm saying. Like they're all like fine, but like there's some that are really good.
Yeah, exactly. I think it just depends on what you get, but I don't know why it's like. It's because there was some article that somebody wrote somewhere. Because I don't think it was all about millennials, and they, for some reason, said avocado toast along with Starbucks. And that's where it blew up, because I don't think we necessarily eat it any more than any other generation. It's just suddenly...
Yeah, I don't even know where the writer of that article landed on avocado toast as a thing.
Nobody does. That entire article was crazy, because it was like rent in New York for like... $1,000 for like $1,000 square foot, and people were like, "Excuse you, sir."
Yeah,
I mean, like
that must have been from like CNBC where the articles like, "Here's how I paid my student debt because my parents gave me a condo in the middle of Harlem that I rented out for $2,000."
I remember the article because it was also like the people they were like budgets for the weekend, and it was like,
"Oh yeah,
$500 per Saturday and Sunday night." It was like, "Okay, sir, what?"
Yeah,
where are you going?
Saving so much.
They're going to a Hawks game in 2015. That's where they're going.
We're all like friends, you know. Like not everybody lives in a rent controlled grandmother, whatever apartment, like Friends. Okay.
You know what? When they were putting those articles out during like the big like shutdown 2020, like when the pandemic started, that shit was coming out and they were making fun of how people in our age group dress. And I was just like, these fucking, I was yelling like, these fucking losers, get off TikTok. You don't even know how to wash your clothes. Like I turned into like an old man.
No, like those articles about with the ridiculous weekend budgets. Like I just last weekend I was, or 2 weekends ago, I was in Indianapolis for an entire weekend for work. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I went to the really fancy steakhouse on Friday night in Indianapolis, and I did not spend $500 that whole weekend, hotels included. So I don't know where the shit people are going to spend $500 a night.
The whole point of millennials.
I told you, the United Center.
We're poor. We are the poor generation. Of course, we're not spending that much money. Yeah. We're not poor because we're not spending that much money. We're just, we don't have any money. That's why we keep canceling everything.
There's no upward mobility.
Yeah. All our money's going to our student debt that we were paying off until we're 40.
I mean, that was the whole running joke of us killing everything. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like that was, it wasn't that we were like just having different interests than our parents. It's that we were killing everything. Like,
yeah.
I wish I remembered some of the things we were killing because I wanted a campaign for more.
Diamonds.
Yeah.
Yeah, diamonds are a big do you know the weirdest one that I saw was dryer sheets?
What the fuck?
We killed dryer sheets are not like mass.
I use dryer sheets. Yeah. I get them at Costco.
Oh. I don't use them, but I use I have a little ball that
I had those too, but the dryer sheets smell nice.
We need to bring these back because there's plenty more things we need to kill.
Oh, so much chain restaurants, malls. We're slowly killing malls.
Amazon killed malls. Like
I used to manage a store, and like my main, like my home store was in a mall, and the mall was like, it used to be bumping even not that long ago. Like weekends were crazy. Like we made a lot of money, and now you go there and it's like, it looks like the zombie apocalypse.
I went to, I remember needing to go, I need to find a bathroom somewhere on the road, and I was down by Bourbonnais, and I went to the mall that's right off of 57 down there, and it was like it was an 11 o'clock on a Tuesday, and I think it was last spring, right, as things were just about to start opening up, so it wasn't the best time to go, but if you've ever walked through a mall when there's like maybe 10 people inside, it is the most horror movie-esque thing you can do. It's absolutely terrifying. Like I cannot imagine, like, if you ever had to open your store at the mall, like no way in hell. There's gonna be zombies in every storefront.
Well, we used to, my brother and I, if we opened together, he worked with me, we would play like Poison the Well to keep people away before we were open. But
that's a good idea.
You know, it's funny, like rent too, though. Like Dick's Sporting Goods moved out of our mall and now they're like across the street by me. And the one on 41 moved buildings too. It's like a while ago. The rent is so expensive that like anchor stores are closing or moving out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Welcome to the real estate portion of this podcast, by the way.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I was trying to go buy a putter. And also they want $300 for an Odyssey putter. It's like, give me a fucking break.
Man, malls down here are still super packed all the time.
Well, I went to the mall in Pittsburgh every time I go up there in October, I was there and it was fine. It was nice, yeah. But like,
was it in the city proper? Because maybe it's a suburb.
No, it's in Robinson. It's okay. It's like suburbs.
The suburb, the one that's closest to where I am right now is in a place called Kennesaw.
Okay.
And that one's always packed, and I actually hate going there. And then go up a little bit, and it's on the border of the perimeter to Atlanta. Always packed too. If you go to like Lenox, which if you guys. Trends constantly because crazy shit happens there. If it's not a shooting, it's somebody, some rapper being like, I'm gonna give you all this money, and they do that a lot there. That one is like
Georgia's hopping, man.
Hit or miss. And then you go across the street, you hit like dead zone ones, you know. So it's an interesting weird down here in the south. But
this is now the urban exploring part of this podcast.
Come to Atlanta. I'll show you around all the malls.
We're going to be like the YouTubers who have we have to wear masks. So we're going in abandoned malls and can't breathe in the bacteria.
One good thing about wearing masks at a mall is you can't smell that shit they spray at you because there's still people that do that at the malls down here.
Oh, yeah.
What, like the perfume? The
random cologne and perfume people?
Yeah, the cologne and perfume people that are just like, let me spritz this to
you. See, like when you work at... I was going to say, when you work in a mall for so long, they know you work there and they don't fuck with you.
I want to one day, I'm going to have to listen back to this and somehow chart the map from avocado to getting sprayed at the mall by the random cologne and perfume kiosk.
Man, all I want now is avocado. Thanks. I'm going to go have some.
You do that, Betsy, because I think we're going to wrap up this episode. I think we've gone completely enough off the rails. I think Shay might have left. I think
I'm here.
So now you know how.
Shay pulled the SpongeBob. I'm gonna head out.
Now, so is that what Betsy feels like when we start talking about pro wrestling at the start of every show? Probably.
I usually just mute you guys, and I'm.
I do have a question for Betsy off air, though. I don't think it's a good question to ask you on air.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then let's wrap that up so we can get to the off-air portion, because that's always the most entertaining part. So that's going to do it for this episode of Musings on Madison. Thank you so much for listening to whatever these inane ramblings were. We'll be back next week with another show. We should be. I don't think we have schedule conflicts next week. But Shay is on Twitter at Shepherd Price. Mill's at Mill182. Betsy's not on Twitter. You can find her at SecondCityHockey.com under the name LBR. I'm at DMeld57. The main account is at 2NDCityHockey. If you could please head over to wherever you get your podcast and rate, give us a good rating, share, tell your friends, subscribe, follow, all that good stuff. We'd much appreciate it. And we'll be back with another show next week where we'll probably yell about Kyle Davidson some more. So after he makes his first trade that we decide we all hate, and then we're back to square one all over again. So thanks again for listening. Thanks to the panel for hanging out, and we'll talk to you next week.